Thank you for that introduction. Okay, so my name is Mrs. Haber. I have my own identity, but she's perfectly fine. She asked me how to introduce myself. I said Rabbi Haber's wife is fine. So I want to tell you, I'm here. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm here to tell you tonight about my son Shmuel. And anyone here have Rabbi Haber? So, yes. Okay. So have you heard about Shmuel?
Yes.
Have you heard Shmuel from Beit Shemesh? He's really loud. You should be able to hear him. Okay. So before I start, I just want to ask you, is there anyone here who's not familiar with what autism is? Everyone who's worked at HASS? Okay, so a lot of you know what autism is. The reason I'm asking is one time when I finished the whole speech, somebody came over to me and said to me, just could you tell me what autism is? So obviously, if you don't know what it is, you understand. So let me just tell you briefly, autism is a spectrum. And when somebody is very, very autistic, they're completely within their own world. They may just rock and spin and hum. And someone on the other end can have Asperger's and just have some social awkwardness. That doesn't mean if anyone's socially awkward, she has Asperger's, she just could. They can get married, they can hold jobs and everything like that. So my son Shmuel is literally right in the middle. Now, my son, my older son, whose name is Shlomo, don't get mixed up, came over to me one day and said, Ima, I know you love Shmuel, but could you just please tell me, do you wish that he wasn't autistic? And you would think that I would say, of course I wish he wasn't autistic, but I actually had to think about it. I couldn't answer it so quickly. And I had a very long think, and I came up with 6 points, and that's what I'm going to share with you tonight. The first point is like this. When I was younger, when I was in high school, I know a lot of you volunteer with kids with special needs. I never did. And the reason I never did is because I wasn't comfortable around kids with special needs. And that always bothered me. And then when I went to Stern, all my friends worked in HASC. And they all said to me, Sarah Leigh, you've got to come work in HASC. You'll love it. And I said, no, that's not for me. But it bothered me that I wasn't comfortable around people with special needs. And one of my friends, she wanted to convince me that I would love HASC, and she told me the following story to convince me. She said that when she was a counselor there, she had requested little kids, and instead they gave her middle-aged women, which is really hard. She said the first 2 weeks she lost a lot of weight because she couldn't eat, like she was so nauseous around them. But by the end of the summer, she was eating off their plates. She said what happened was, suddenly there was an announcement one day that she should come to the gate, because if you've ever gone to HASC or if you plan to go, you know, your parents can't visit you whenever they want. If they visit you, they have to come to the gate, and you have to come meet them. So they announced that she should come to the gate. The problem is one of her campers had just thrown up all over her, but she didn't have any time to change her clothes. She ran to the gate, she had thrown up all over her, and her mother, who's very insightful, said, I have never, ever seen you look so fulfilled in my entire life, and she meant it. And this was my friend's way of trying to convince me to go to HASC. And I said, no, that's a beautiful story. You could stick to your throw up. I don't need that. It didn't work. So again, it always bothered me that I wasn't comfortable with kids with special needs. And then there I was working in SKA. Anyone from SKA? Okay. So I was Mrs. SKA. I had one kid, I had two kids. Anyone remember the 10th grade Leili Yun, a sleepover? For those of you who didn't go to SKA, it's a sleepover in 10th grade. I slept there with my babies in the principal's office on her couch. I was Mrs. SK, that was my life, and I loved it. And all of a sudden, I had my third kid, and right away, I noticed that there were problems. Problems that I noticed was that he wasn't doing anything. He was 3 months old, he didn't lift his head, he didn't turn, nothing. Took him to a neurologist, and she said, she held up a toy in front of him, and for the first time in his life, I promise, the first time in his life, he moved his head. She said, there's nothing wrong with your baby, you just have to get better toys. I'm like, okay, great. I don't want there to be something wrong with my baby. I went home. By 7 months, he still wasn't doing anything. By 12 months, I was working in Misora. Anyone? Misora? Okay. I was working in Misora. My mother's helper said, you have the easiest baby to take care of. I could leave him on the top of a hill near a highway, and I could walk away for 2 hours, and I don't have to worry that he's going to move. He didn't move. He just lay there all day. There was something wrong with my son. We didn't get a diagnosis till he was 5 years old, which is very old, that he was autistic. But we knew there was something wrong. In fact, when he was about 4 years old, I suddenly got a letter in the mail, and it said that his IQ is below 50. And I was surprised because I didn't even know he had an IQ test in school. And I called up the Board of Ed, and I said, Excuse me, it says here that my son's IQ is below 50. I didn't know he had an IQ test. She said, yeah, they gave him one in school. And it said on big, big letters at the bottom of the page, big letters, retarded. And I was like, my son's retarded. I'm so confused. They always told me he's developmentally delayed. Now, to me, developmentally delayed meant like the bus is delayed. It will come soon. It's delayed, but it will come. And I just never thought of him as retarded, and I wasn't worried. I'm not one of these like worried kind of mothers. So, okay, he's delayed. He'll catch up. I wasn't worried. Remember, he didn't have the autistic label yet. So I said to the lady on the phone, he's retarded. They always told me that he's developmentally delayed. And she said to me, and I will never forget her accent, and she said, delayed, retarded, the same thing. And I'm like, I put down the phone and I started to cry. If you ever work in the Board of Ed, don't break it to parents that way, okay? Very insensitive. Anyway, so I started getting more and more and more and more and more involved with him. And what ended up happening is obviously I love my son, and I loved him from the minute he was born. And because he was my son, and then I became aware that he was special needs, I suddenly was forced into a situation that I was comfortable around people with special needs. In fact, my husband has a sister who has Down syndrome. And here again, like I was forced into a situation with people with special needs. And I'm sure you know this, that the word nes, nisayon, comes from the word nes, which means something high. And that's what a nisayon is. It elevates you. It shows you you could do things that you never ever thought you'd do. And that's the first thing that I thought about with my son Shmuel. It showed me my potential. So that's the first thing I learned about Shmuel. Now the second thing that's amazing that I learned because I have Shmuel is the following. To illustrate, I'll tell you a story. Basically, we decided 8 years ago to make Aliyah. And I was packing for months. And every time I'd pack a suitcase, Shmuel would unpack it. Pack, unpack, pack, unpack. And it constantly. 15 minutes before the cab was supposed to come take us to the airport, my husband and I looked at each other and said, we can't get on this plane. We're not packed. I've been packing for half a year, but nothing's packed. So we called up Nefesh B'Nefesh, we explained, they said no problem, one of you stay behind to finish up, one of you come on the plane, and whenever the other one's ready, you'll come. Okay, so we decided that my husband would stay in America, finish packing up, and I would go on the plane with my four kids at the time. Fine, no problem, we get to the airport, Shmuel was 7 years old, everything's fine, till we get to the point where you can't go past anymore unless you're going on the plane. At which point my husband stayed behind. So Shmuel's walking. A lot of little kids have a problem when things don't go exactly the way they think it's gonna go. But people with autism, they simply can't deal with it. So when he suddenly realized that my husband wasn't there, he started to scream, Abba, Abba, and he ran away. And he ran the whole JFK airport. My husband's racing after him, catches him, bring him back to me. Finally going, and it was heartbreaking, my husband told me. He hears him screaming, my parents, everyone's screaming, Abba, Abba. Anyway, we finally get to the place where there's two big guards standing there and you're supposed to go through, they check you. He throws himself in between those metal gates and he refuses to move. And there's a whole bunch of people waiting behind me. And the guards say to me, lady, move the kid. And I'm thinking, you move the kid. He doesn't want to move. When he doesn't want to move, you can't move him. Anyway, finally we got through and I didn't know what I was going to do. I just didn't know what to do. I was so tired. I hadn't slept for two nights. I was looking forward to sleeping on the plane and I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how we were going to get on the plane. He wasn't moving. And suddenly, like Kriyat Yamsuf, something appeared. I don't know what it's really called, but I call it a movable floor. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Whoa, and I picked the kid up, I threw him on it. He was so excited, it was fun. And I was so excited because I didn't have to move him. And then as soon as we finished moving, I threw him on the next one. There were three in a row. And then we were almost by the plane. I got him on the plane, buckled him in. I give a big breath, okay. And then he goes, I have to go to the bathroom. So I didn't know what to do. I was so stupid. I was tired. And I was like, oh, the kid's seven. He's wearing diapers. He finally wanna go to the bathroom. And I unbuckled him, and he didn't need to go to the bathroom, and he didn't stay buckled the entire flight, and it was a night flight, and it was a flight from somewhere else, okay? It was awful. It was awful. And he's going around and around and around and around, and I'm so tired, and I'm following him, and we keep going into first class, and they're wonderful. They high-five him every time he passes, no problem, until the staff comes over to me and says, these are first-class people. You can't keep walking in there. Okay, there was a curtain stopping us from going in there. There wasn't a door, a curtain. How am I going to stop him from going in there? So I stand there blocking it. He starts to scream. All the babies on the plane have just fallen asleep. The cat on the plane just, there was someone brought a cat, had just fallen asleep. And my son starts to scream. So everybody, I meet people in Ramat Beit Shemesh now. They smile at me. Hi, do I know you? Yeah, I was on the plane with you, okay? Everybody remembers me from the plane. I don't remember anyone. They remember me. But anyway, they were all sympathetic. Everyone felt bad for me. But if any of you ever flown with a baby, and in Mitzvah Hashem, you will, you know, you'll in Mitzvah Hashem fly maybe with a baby. It's not fun. And when your baby falls asleep, the last thing you want is someone waking the baby up. So I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. And I was blocking from going to first class. And I finally found this, like, this place. It was a corner. I don't know what it is. It was, and it had a curtain. And I just threw him in there. It was only a door on one side. And I stood there like this. I wasn't going to let him out. Okay, I'll stand the whole night. I'll stand the whole night. I don't care. And all of a sudden, someone comes over to me and says, "You can't stay here. It's dangerous." And I forgot to tell you that on the way to that place, we passed one of those bars that say, "Do not touch under any circumstances." And I said to the flight attendant, "Is it really dangerous? Because my son really, like, he's pretty strong." She said, "Keep him away from that." And I couldn't believe it. Who would think that on a plane, the lives of, you know, all the people there are dependent on my 7-year-old son? I still can't believe it, that it's not locked better. So when he was finally there, I was so relieved, and she says, "You have to leave, it's dangerous." I didn't know what to do. At that point, I lost it. I just started to cry. I was overtired, and I had no help, and I didn't know what to do. Crying. I sank down on the floor, and I'm just crying. And all of a sudden, I feel someone near me, like out of the corner of my eye, but I didn't want to look up, because I knew that I had mascara into my mouth, and I was embarrassed. But they stay there. So finally, I picked up, and there was a man, a flight attendant, and he said, "Is your son autistic?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I volunteer with autistic kids. I will help you. Don't worry." And then another flight attendant came and said, "Is your son autistic?" "Yeah. I volunteer helping autistic kids ride horses. Don't worry. I'll come." And then another one comes. There were 5 flight attendants total. "Your son autistic?" "Yeah. I volunteer with autistic kids." I can't even tell you. I still get the chills thinking about it. The feeling that I had, I felt like Hashem was just watching over me. Seriously, what are the chances of 3 out of 5 flight attendants having experience with autistic kids just when I needed it most? And that began my just very strong sense of hashkacha, that God is watching over me. And because I feel it because of Shmuel, I feel it with my other kids too. And it's probably the best feeling in the world to know that the most powerful being in the world who can do anything is looking out for you. There's so many people in the world, but he's looking out for me and made me go on this plane where 3 out of 5 flight attendants are on it. And what ended up happening is they helped me. They let me sit on their special chair that only the flight attendants, they let him sit on that. They buckled him in. I did everything I could to make him fall asleep. I gave him Benadryl. I gave him lavender drops. I became homeopathic. I did everything. And he fell asleep 15 minutes before the plane landed. And when the plane landed, I didn't know what to do because I sort of wanted to leave him on the plane. And he finally was sleeping, and my husband wasn't with me. Nefesh B'Nefesh gave me an adopted husband for the trip. So if you see the pictures from wherever they post it, there's me, my 3 kids, my adopted husband holding Shmuel, walking downstairs. Lovely family. This really nice guy. I don't remember his name. And Hashem, like, really was watching out for me. That's when I started to feel Hashem in my life because of Shmuel. And now I'm going to tell you another story about that feeling of hashgacha. When we got to Ramat Beit Shemesh, where we were renting for a year, we were supposed to rent for a year, we got a cab, we got there. The second we got out of the cab, he ran away. And we couldn't find him for 2 hours. And we called the police, and I was terrified. And they were like, "Does he speak English?" I said, "Does he speak English? He doesn't talk." I was terrified. We ended up finding him. If anyone know Ramat Beit Shemesh here? Okay, so I don't know if you know this street. There's Sorek, Lachish, Nachshon, and this other, like, thing up to a school. In other words, cars can come from 4 directions, and he was standing right in the middle, going, and you can imagine all the Israeli car drivers going, "Yeah, yeah," and he's like, "Try it." When they yell at you, it really works. And we got him, and he stayed, and we put him in the house and we locked the door. And I decided that I'm going to leave him in the locked house for the rest of his life. But I couldn't do that, right? So now I need to take him for therapy. So there's a lady in Ramat Beit Shemesh who does a therapy called craniosacral therapy. And it's supposed to really help autistic people. Anyone know about craniosacral therapy? Okay, so it's one of these alternative medicine kind of things. I meet with her. She tells me it's amazing. It helps autistic kids. I said, what should I do? She said, once a week, come to me at this and this time. I tell you the truth, I can't make an appointment with you once a week because my son's so unpredictable. I can't guarantee that I'm going to be there on time when you tell me to. Forget it. I'm going home. She says, wait a minute. I don't know if this helps you at all, but I'm moving to a new office next week. I said, where? She said, Lachish. I said, I live on Lachish. What number? She says, 9. And I say, I live in Lachish 9. She moved her office the week after I needed her to my building. So once again, then we went. All we had to do was go down the stairs. We went once a week to that. And again, I just felt this amazing sense of Hashkacha. Hashem's watching out for me. Now here's another story that if I wasn't telling it to you, you wouldn't even believe it. But I promise it's true. And my husband doesn't lie, and he promises it's true too. So listen, you can ask him about it. You're not going to believe it. So one Shabbos, I'm reading a book. I'm not saying that I lie. I'm just saying he really does. If any of you know him, do you believe me? It's like very honest, right? Okay. You won't exaggerate nothing. Okay. So what happens is one Shabbos, I'm reading this book, and anyone heard of facilitated communication? Raise your hand. Anyone heard of it? Okay, facilitated communication is not a Jewish concept. It's a concept in the whole world, and it's based on the idea that people who cannot communicate verbally have an ability to communicate in a different way. And basically, if you take a person whose whole body doesn't work well, for whatever reason, they could have any disability, and you put their hands on a keyboard, it's called facilitated because the facilitator has to hold the hand up, you ask them questions, and then they type the answers. They did this with 3-month-olds who can't type. They put a ABC board in front of a 3-month-old. 3-month-old don't know the ABC, and they were able to answer questions and say what they wanted. So as you can imagine, a lot of people think it's a bunch of baloney. So this book that I was reading was written by a rabbi who was proving that it was true. And he took every argument that people have against it and it showed why that wasn't an argument. For example, people claim that the facilitator who's holding the kid's hand is really doing the typing. And he said, no, a lot of times the facilitators don't even know the language that the child's typing in. For example, in Israel, the facilitator can be a Filipino who doesn't know any Hebrew, yet the kid was still writing. So he knocked down every argument. So anyway, again, this is not a Jewish concept. They do it in the whole world. So I'm reading this book, and basically the kids were asked, how is it possible for you to do this while you're sleeping? You do it while you're sleeping also. So they explained like this. Every person has a soul, and the soul is connected to God. And a regular person whose body works well, their body gets in the way of their feeling their soul, because their bodies work well. But people whose bodies don't work well, it doesn't get in the way, and they sense their soul much more, and that's why they could type when they're sleeping, because it's not their eyes, it's their soul, and their souls don't need the physical eyes to see. So a lot of parents who couldn't communicate with their kids went and asked them questions. And a lot of Jewish parents asked their Jewish kids who really couldn't communicate, not like my son, my son's a little bit verbal, really couldn't communicate, what can I do to make your life easier? Like, you seem to suffer so much. And all the Jewish kids said the same thing. Learn Torah with me. You may look like I'm not listening. It may look like I don't care. It may even look like it's hard for me. I'm telling you, it makes my life easier. Learn Torah with me. So I'm reading this. And again, my son's verbal. He doesn't need facilitated communication. It won't work with him. But I was like very inspired. And I said to my husband, that Shabbos, we got to learn more with Shmuel. Now, we've always learned with him, but I said, let's learn more. So the next night, my husband comes home Sunday night, and he walks into the house, and Shmuel's lying on the couch, like half asleep, and my husband says, Shmuel, you want to learn Torah with Abba? So he says, yeah, I want to learn Torah with Abba. That's how he talked then. So I said to my husband, I don't think you could really learn with him because he has, like, his diaper's a little bit dirty. So my husband goes, okay, Shmuel, Ima will change your diaper, and then I'll learn with you. But as I explained to you, autistic kids, they get into, they think something's going to happen one day. They can't handle it. So my Shmuel didn't want me to change his diaper now. He wanted to learn now. Plus, when he's tired, he's even more inflexible. So he starts screaming, "No! Wanna learn Torah with Abba! Wanna learn Torah with Abba!" And I was like, the kid wants to learn Torah, you know, like, so I said, "Oh, so you know, I don't think it's so dirty. His diaper's not really so dirty, you know, it's okay." So my husband goes, "Okay, Shmuel, go take a sefer." So we have Sfarim in our house, a lot of Sfarim. So he randomly walks over to a sefer. He doesn't know how to read Hebrew. He randomly walks over to a sefer, pulls it down, randomly opens it up, brings it over to my husband. My husband looks at it and goes, "You're not going to believe it." I said, "What?" He goes, "You're not going to believe what he gave me." What? It was a Mishnah Berurah. It was the halacha that you're not allowed to learn Torah in front of a baby with a dirty diaper. Okay? I was freaking out. And I'm telling you, it's true. You could ask my husband. Okay? So here was like just another example of where I just feel this unbelievable connection with Hashem because of Shmuel. And I'm going to tell you one more example like this. So when we moved to Israel, we were planning to rent for 1 year and then move somewhere else. So I didn't unpack all my boxes because I didn't want to pack all of them again. But there was one box of papers that exploded all over the place. So I put it in a drawer in the kitchen. So Pesach came, I took all the papers out and I was cleaning the drawer. And there was this one paper on top of the pile. I didn't even know where I got it from. And it kept falling, it kept like floating away. I kept picking it up and putting it back on the pile over and over and over again. And I said, "You know what, let me read it." I read it and I read something I never read before. I bet half of you heard of this. I never heard of it. It said, "Good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help. Have a good day. I love you." Anyone familiar with that? Yeah, okay, I never heard of that. I didn't even know if it was a Jewish concept. I didn't know where I got that from. I had no idea. I later figured out why I had it, but I didn't know then. I'm like, "Oh, that's so nice. Like, Hashem's sending me a message. He wants me to know, like, he's there for me." And I had a very, very hard first year. They say don't make Galiel teenagers. They're right. Okay, so I had a really hard first year. Everyone thought my autistic kid was the hard thing. Okay, that wasn't the hard thing. So I was just like, "Oh, that's so nice. Hashem's sending me a message." Fine. So then one of my kids comes in and sees the paper and starts to read it. They're reading it in a very like silly kind of voice, like this: "Good morning, this is God. I'll take care of all your problems today. I don't need your help. I love you. Have a good day." Over and over and over and over again. As you can imagine, it lost all the message for me. Like, I was supposed to be getting a message from God, and I wasn't getting it, because when someone makes fun of something, it makes it lose it, which is why I have to be careful not to make fun. So I lost it. I lost that feeling that I had, that special feeling. The next morning, I went to knock on my neighbor's door. My neighbors are breathless, and there's a magnet on their door that was never there before. And it said, "Good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help. Have a good day. I love you." I was like freaking out. I just heard that for the first time last night. Then my kid ruined it for me. I knock on their door every single day. It was never there before. What is that? So I knock on the door and I say, "What is that?" And she said, "Oh, that's a famous saying from Rav Nachman." I said, "But why was it never on your door before?" She said, "You know, it's really strange. It's always on the inside of our house. I don't know who put it on the outside of the house today. Why?" And I explained to her and I was just freaking out. Anyway, a few weeks later, Shmuel was being really, really difficult. Really difficult. And then he walks over to me, and let me just explain something to you about him. He wasn't really talking. The only thing he was talking was in like anything that was a sing-song or a chant. That was the only thing he would say. So when I said he said on the plane he has to go to the bathroom, that was like a chant. "Have to go to the bathroom." Like, that's the only reason he said it. He really didn't talk. He comes over to me, and I'm having like a really difficult time, and he goes, "Good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help. Have a good day. I love you." What does he know that? How does he? Oh, also, I forgot to tell you, he has like an amazing memory. Amazing, not photographic, I don't know what it's called, audiographic. He hears things and he remembers them. And that's why it's a little bit like Google. Like, if you say something to him that he once heard somewhere, he will just start, okay? Like, one time we had a plumber come over and he says to the plumber, I said to the plumber, "What's your name?" He said, "Yossi." And then as Yossi was leaving, Shmuel says to him, "Good job, Yossi." And I'm like, where did you get that from? And then 2 years later, I heard a tape where the Rebbe calls on the kid Yossi, and the kid answers the question, right? And the teacher says, "Good job, Yossi." And that's what I'm saying. Like, he wasn't saying good job to Yossi because he did a good job. He's saying good job, Yossi, because I said Yossi, so he said, you understand what I'm saying? So anyway, I realized he must have somehow heard it, and I suddenly realized that when my kid was saying it a million times in this funny voice, he must have been in the room, which I didn't notice, and he must have remembered it, and he was saying it back to me exactly when I needed to hear it. And I needed to hear it because of him, and he was saying the words as if, so to speak, he was speaking from God, and it was just, again, very, very powerful for me. I kept getting these messages because of Shmuel that Hashem was looking out for me, and it was, again, it was like a really, 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 really special feeling. So far, I thought of two things to tell my son Shlomo. Number one, having Shmuel elevated me. It showed me my potential. And number two, I feel like amazing hashkacha in my life because of Shmuel, which I never felt that way before, never. Okay. Now, a third thing about Shmuel is that because of him, I learned to appreciate every little thing that my kids do. My kids before him were normally developed. So I didn't appreciate anything. Yes, they walk. Yes, they ran. Yes, they do everything they're supposed to. Every single thing that Shmuel does, it's because somebody taught him how to do. Everything. Even like a therapist was explaining to me, maybe some of you working in HASS know this, there's something called midline. Anyone know what I'm talking about? It's an imaginary line that's like in front of your face. And a child that reaches a certain level, until he reaches that age or level, he doesn't cross midline. That means a little kid, until a certain age, if something's in front of him on his right side, he will always reach it with his right hand. If something's on the left side, he will always reach for it with his left hand. And it's a level that if something's on his left side, he will cross midline to reach with his right hand. But Shmuel wasn't doing that when he's supposed to. The therapist had to literally hold his left hand down when she put something on his left side, pick up his right hand to teach him to cross midline. Everything was a big deal. So, for example, as I said, he wasn't talking. Nothing, nothing, nothing. But he was singing. So I made everything into the house into a song. And one day, my other kid came home with a chant that he learned in school, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It goes, "Hello, my name is Joe. I work." Anyone know it? Yeah? "I work in a button factory. I have a cat, a dog, and a family," right? One day, my boy said, "Joe, are you busy?" And I said, "No." "Then press the button with your right pinky. Raise your hand if you know it." Okay? Most of you know it, okay? And then you know it goes on and on, but then you're doing like, right? You're doing all that, right? So Shmuel loved it. So I had to change his diapers. He was big, but autistic kids take a long time to train. And it was very hard to train him because it was hard to change him because he didn't like to lie there. And I knew he liked this chant. So I would say it to him the whole time I was changing him. And I modified it a little bit so that, I don't know, he liked it. I don't know why I modified it this way. But I changed it so instead of "Are you busy?" And he said, "No way." That's just the way I changed it. I don't know why. That's just what I did. So I'm doing it. And basically, Shmuel lived to hear me say, "Are you busy?" And I said, "No way." So basically, the dirtier the diaper, the slower I said that chant. And I would just like stall because I knew one thing. He would stay on the diaper table until I said, "No way." So it was a very, very helpful chant. Now, one time we were in Misora, we took 2 days off and we went on a family trip. We stopped at a gas station. My husband went in with the other kids and I was alone in the car with Shmuel. He was getting all restless, so I sang his favorite song, "Hello, my name is Joe." And all of a sudden it occurred to me, you know, this kid knows words because he can chant them or sing them. So why won't he say words? So obviously, maybe he just doesn't feel any need to. So I'm going to make him feel a need to. So I'm sitting there in the car, and then I go, "Are you busy?" And I said, and I see him, he's like a porcupine. He's like all bristly, waiting for me to say "No way." And I refuse to say it. And I said, he's like, "No." And I said, and I wouldn't say it. And he couldn't take it anymore. And he said, "No way." And those were the first words that he ever spoke. And I can't even begin to tell you how that felt, hearing my kid finally talk for the first time, a lot older than you're supposed to. And everyone came out of the gas station. I'm like, "He said no way." And they're like, "He did it. Say no way, Shmuel. Say no way, Shmuel." Of course, he didn't say no way again, ever. Okay? So that's what I'm saying. And then when I had my next child, his name is Bracha, I couldn't get over her. I couldn't get over how she did things. So having Shmuel made me appreciate it. Now I have twin 3.5-year-olds. They're actually delayed because they were born early. And they're delayed. And I was like, "Oh, they're delayed." I'm like, "That's delayed. That's delayed." I'm not even worried. I mean, they're fine. They're catching up, doing everything. Like, I can't, they do everything. They're just a teeny bit slower than kids are supposed to. And it's just, I guess if they were my first kids, I'd be all panicky. But compared to Shmuel, they're doing everything, thank God. And like, they do everything. So that's the next thing I learned because of Shmuel. It made me appreciate every single little thing. Now the fourth thing, I said there were six. The fourth thing that I learned because of Shmuel is he just has an adorable personality, and I really don't know what part of it comes from being autistic and what part of it comes from he would have had that personality, I don't know. But because of that, it's hard for me to say like, oh, I'm so upset he's autistic, because it's so cute. And I'll give you an example. He's obsessed with the Chafetz Chaim, absolutely obsessed. When he would come to our house, we have like five Chafetz Chaim pictures on the living room wall. We only have Chafetz Chaim pictures on the living room wall because he tears down every other picture, okay? But the Chafetz Chaim, he won't tear down. He tore down the Chazon Ish, and he tore down, and he tore everyone, and he knows all the rabbis' names. Could I ask him who's your favorite rabbis, and he'd be like, he's like, the Chazon Ish and Reb Kanievsky, he knows everybody's names. And then, yes, he did. He made us put a picture of my husband in the sukkah, okay? Like, Rabbi Abba, this is a secret. You're not going to say anything to anyone, right? Like, you're not going to tell my husband I mentioned that. He was so embarrassed. He's like, people are going to come here and they're going to think that I think I'm a rabbi worthy of being. He's like, we want Rabbi Abba in the sukkah. And everyone who comes in, yes, Rabbi Abba. Don't say anything, though. You're not going to say anything tomorrow, like when he comes in, right? Okay, show him bias, right? Okay. So, anyway, he's obsessed, but the Chafetz Chaim is the top. So he's 7 years old, and my parents bring him a stuffed bear for his birthday, which is appropriate. He throws it behind the couch. I buy him a Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim! Everyone walks in. Chafetz Chaim for Shmuel's birthday. Chafetz Chaim, and he's like obsessed. When he goes to those shuls that have, you have it here, the Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation, like they have the set of star. There's a little Chafetz Chaim on each one. He could sit there all day. Chafetz Chaim, and he won't stop. He's very thorough. So that's like, is that because he's autistic? I don't know. I once asked like an energy healer if he used to be the Chafetz Chaim. She said no. Okay? But I just like, he's obsessed. Okay, so that's like what. Here's another thing. He's obsessed with the Jewish holidays. Obsessed. He makes his blocks into menorahs and he lights them and he doesn't like them. He pretends to like them and he makes the brachos. But his sukkahs, like sukkahs, we could leave a sukkah in our yard all year. He'd be so excited. He just loves it. But his favorite thing is the shofar. And he's just, he can't get enough of them. So one day I was home, and I had a cold, and it hurt my throat so much, and I kept coughing, my chest, it hurt every time. I really felt like my ribs were breaking apart, and my lungs were hurting. And I come into the kitchen, and I go, and he goes, Shevalin! And I like didn't know what to do. I had a choice. I could cough three times and like fall apart, or I could explain to him that it hurts me so much to cough, and I coughed three times, okay? Then he's like, Deruah! And I think, oh, I'm done. He's like, Dikia Gedola! And I'm serious. I was dying, but I knew if I tried to explain, I just had to explain so many times that that would hurt more, so I did it. And then I yawned once. Did you ever yawn at Shrua? There he is. He's really obsessive. So these are adorable things. I don't know what's from his being autistic and what's from his being Shmuel, but that's who Shmuel is. That's four things already. Number five, because of him, the rest of my family has become much more sensitive. My older son Shlomo is going into working with kids with special needs. My daughter Bracha is just volunteers a lot with special needs kids. She's just, everyone's like very, very sensitive because of Shmuel. They wouldn't say things to other people, very sensitive. For example, when Bracha was 2 years old, she had this big mop of curls, like a mop. And Shmuel sometimes pulls people's hair. And I have to tell you, I'm very patient naturally. It's not something I worked on. I'm just patient. And I'm really patient with him. He needs a lot of patience. But when he pulls my hair, does anyone ever have their hair pulled? Yeah. Isn't it painful? It kills. And when he, and I never have an urge to hit a child, ever, but when he pulls my hair, I just want to hit him. It hurts so much. So he sticks his hand in the mop of curls and not only pulls her hair, he drags her by her hair. She was two, he was three and a half, and you're not going to believe this, as he's dragging her, she's 2 years old, she goes, Shmuel. As he's dragged, I love you so much. Why are you hurting me? Okay? And that's not because I told her to do that. I would never tell her to do that. it's just Hashem gave me a present. We named her Bracha. After Shmuel was born, he gave me a Bracha. And she's B'liya in Harvard. She's a very special girl. And in fact, our neighbors, those breastless people, they have a kid the same age. And they asked their mother, why is Bracha so mature and our sibling, who's the same age, not? And she said, well, Hashem gave them Shmuel, so then he gave them Bracha. And I think it's true. I didn't train her to be that way, but she is more sensitive because of Shmuel. You have to be. And to this day, like, he still hurts her sometimes. She adores him, like, absolutely adores him. So as I said, the families become like much more sensitive. And the last point that I want to share with you about Shmuel is that because of Shmuel, I became acquainted with an amazing program that I never would have heard of before. It's called Sunrise. Did anyone ever hear of it? Sunrise? Yeah? You went to Hask? Is that how you heard it? Oh, you're Shenabet.
No,
I've been. Oh, Michlele.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. So basically, what happened was in the 70s, there was this family who had three kids, and the first one was born fine and then completely regressed. And by the time he was 1 year old, he was completely withdrawn into himself. No eye contact whatsoever, rocking, spinning plates perfectly, like the mother couldn't do it herself, the way he managed to get the angle right and everything. And completely withdrawn, no eye contact, no communication, nothing. This was in the 70s. Someone had just published a book called Refrigerator Parents, explaining that the reason people were autistic was because their mothers weren't warm towards them. And people who had autistic kids had the experience that people would come over to them in the supermarket and say, how could you? How could you? So on top of having to deal with the kid, they had to deal with people being really not nice to them. So it wasn't the way it wasn't known the way it was now. So these parents loved their kid and they decided they were going to do anything they could to help him, and they took him to different institutions and they were horrified. They made a movie about an NBC movie in the 70s, and it's called, if you want to watch it, it's on YouTube now. It's called Sunrise or something like that, S-O-N, because their son rose, not S-U-N, okay? Then if you want to see it, whenever I talk in Mechlele, I show it, right? It was a good movie. It's a very moving movie. Anyway, so basically they went from institution to institution. They saw horrible things. They saw the kids being shocked when they were doing their things. They call it stimming. Sunrise calls it isming. You know, when they were humming or flapping to stop them from doing it. They saw them being dragged in sheets all over the place to simulate the womb. So they saw, and they were like, we're not doing this to our kid, we're not doing a kid. And they were trying to figure out how they can get through their kid. And one day the mother was watching her kid, and the kid was, as usual, just going, and she found herself, without planning to, sort of rocking along with him. And then the husband came down and saw the two people in his family going, and he said, what were you doing? She's like, I don't know. I think what I was trying to do was show him that even though you're not coming into our world, I'm going to show you that I'm going to sort of go into your world, do what you do, and show you that I love you the way you are, and you don't have to worry that you have to change for me. And basically the husband said, that's it, because they had been searching for months to try to find a way to help them. And basically, you have to see the movie to believe this, read the book. For the next 3 years, she went into a little room by herself with her son, 12 hours a day. Eventually she got people to help her. She brought her son completely out of autism, 100%, based on this principle of, I'm going to be with you the way you are. And eventually, by feeling so accepted the way he was, she completely brought him out of his autism. And they established the Autism Treatment Center of America to teach other parents how to do that. I went there for 2 weeks. And the little boy, Ron, who had been autistic, is now the CEO of it. No trace of autism. And he was definitely my favorite teacher. He's funny, he's bright, he's a great teacher, and he was brought complete, and they helped a lot of families. So no, my son's still autistic. It depends. They don't make a guarantee that you're gonna be able to do that to everyone, but it helped tremendously. But the most important thing that it helped with was teaching me this attitude. This sounds contradictory, but I found that once I absorbed it, it's a beautiful idea in terms of treating all your children. And it's a beautiful idea in terms of treating yourself. Think about this for a second. I love you the way you are, even though I want more for you in the future. Again, I love you the way you are, even though I want more for you in the future. A lot of times people are mean to themselves because they think that's the only way they'll have progress. For example, let's say you think you have like a bad complexion. So you look in the mirror and then you say, ew, ew, I can't look, I can't look, I can't look. Why? Why are you doing that to yourself? So it could be that one of the reasons you're doing that is because you think that that's the only way to motivate yourself to, I don't know what, not eat chocolate, not eat french fries, drink enough, whatever it is. But what would happen if you would look in the mirror at the pimples and say to that face, I love you the way you are. I want you not to have pimples. Okay, but I don't have to hate you now. It means you're living now. So many of us live for like, I can't wait until. Like when I lose 100 pounds, then I'll start my life. When my complexion clears up, then I'll start my life. When I finish high school, then I start. When I finish, you know, college, then when I get engaged, then when I get married, then when I have kids, then when kids move out of the house, then when I retire, then when I'm dead, then. That's what happens, right? If your attitude is always when the future, what about now? What about now? And that is the most beautiful thing I learned from, and I never would have met that. I never would have met that if not for having Shmuel and learned about sunrise. So to sum it up, six things. Having Shmuel in my house made me realize my potential. It made me appreciate every little thing. It made me feel God in my life. It made me appreciate Shmuel's personality. Made my kids more sensitive. And it introduced me to sunrise and just really taught me what real acceptance is of my kids, myself, my friends, the world. And because of that, I was then able to have an answer for my son Shlomo who asked me. But I have to tell you that the first sukkahs that we lived there in Ramat Beit Shemesh, our neighbors, the Breslovs, right? They're not, that's not their name, they're Breslovs. They invited us over on sukkahs. And they introduced me to a concept, again, you may have heard of it, I never heard of it. It's a Breslov concept that every kid grows up with, which is the idea that a neshama, before it's born, actually looks and picks its own, it picks its family. Did any of you hear of that? Never heard of that. And they said, yeah. The mother said, yeah, when my kids are not nice, I go, listen, honey, I didn't pick you, you picked me, okay? But I thought that was so beautiful, and it made me realize that Shmuel picked us. He picked us with all our problems as the family that would be the best for him. And I was able to tell my son Shlomo honestly that I am so glad that Shmuel picked us. And I'm so glad he's my son. That's the end of my speech. Now, what I didn't tell you, and I usually incorporate this more into the speech, because I don't want anyone who has a kid with special needs in their family, or if one day you have a child with special needs, to think that having an autistic kid is like a comedy show, okay? I survive by noting the funny things, but it's really difficult. And I usually, if you listen to my past recordings, I incorporate it, but I saved it for last because I want to tell you about another reason I'm here tonight besides speaking to you, okay? So Shmuel is everything that I just said he is, and I'm really happy that we have him, but he can be extremely difficult. And just to give you an example, autistic people like to line things up. And when I lived in Queens, he used to take every single bottle, can, jar, container out of the fridge and line it up from the fridge door all the way to the porch. And if anyone dared knock something over, he would go ballistic. He would bang his head, he would pull out his hair, he would tantrum like crazy. And as you could imagine, sometimes people bumped into things because wherever you walked, there was a thing. And the house smelled like pickle juice, it smelled like gefilte fish, you know, it wasn't so much fun. So we couldn't take it, it was horrible, but we didn't know what to do. And then my daughter had this program on the computer for doing interior decorating, and besides having the furniture and the curtains, it also had every object that you could imagine, like Heinz ketchup and pickles and orange juice, so you could really imagine how your house would look if you chose to decorate it that way. So she taught Shmuel how to make a choo-choo train out of all the things he loved to make a choo-choo train out of, but on the computer. So that was wonderful, and he made a choo-choo train on the computer out of all the things, and that was wonderful for one day, because then he discovered if you press Control P, you could print the choo-choo train again and again and again, and then you could make a choo-choo train out of the pictures of the choo-choo train from the fridge to the porch. And you could imagine if anyone walked by, it rustled, which is a lot easier to do than to knock over the pickle jar. So he was always pulling out his hair and banging his head. So that's just one little example. Another example is on Shabbos, on Friday, you know, Shana Bet is here or not? Yeah, okay. So, you know, we wanted to have you over tomorrow night for dessert, right? You know that? We were thinking, I don't know if you know, but we were having
no,
that. What?
Yeah.
Oh, they're there. Okay, so we wanted to have you. We're very excited about it. Problem is, we can't set up if Shmuel's home. So we were going to have my mother watch Shmuel so we could set up. There's no way. There's just no way. Plus, he always comes out naked in the middle, so I didn't know if you'd appreciate that. So we didn't know what to do. And then my mother said she'd watch him, no problem, but then my mother fell. So she can't watch him, and there's no one else who could watch him, so we can't have you over. And that makes me sad, you know? Like, I wanted to have you over. So, like, things like that. It's not so simple. So there's a lot of things, like, on trying to cook for Shabbos, and he keeps shutting the fire, he keeps shutting the light, he keeps shutting the faucet while I'm trying to wash the dishes. It's irritating, and that's just like the little things. He's broken everything in our house. I mean, everything in our house is either broken or it's in the machzan. You can't walk in the machzan. We hide everything in the machzan or the file cabinet, because those are the only two things you can't get into. We told our cleaning lady we have bananas in the file cabinet. She said, why? I said, because if he's around, he eats all of them, so we have to hide them. She said, bananas in the filing cabinet. I like that. I'm going to write a book called Bananas in the Filing Cabinet about an autistic kid. I'm like, okay, you know, you could interview him. So I'm saying it's hard. It can be very, very, very hard. He's like, he's dragged me by my hair across the whole house. He's kicked the glass doors and shattered them all over the place. I was terrified when I was pregnant with the twins. They were premature, that they were so little I was going to bring them home. He could squish them. Like, I was really scared, and thank God he seems to be very scared of them. I'm not sure why. It's not because my daughter, the little one, has a big mouth. She's a Shmuel, that not nice, and he runs away. It's like the ant with the elephant, but that's really how it is. So it's hard. It's very, very hard. Now, when we made Aliyah, I left behind a lot of support that helped me in America, but we wanted to move here anyway, and I really didn't know what we were going to do. So I had the therapist in my building, which was great, and Sunrise, which I was training to do with Shmuel, I actually homeschooled him when we made Aliyah for 3 years using the Sunrise method, and it ends up there's one Sunrise therapist in the whole Israel, and guess where her office was? Ramat Beit Shemesh. So again, Hashkacha. So I had support, but for practical things, it's very hard for me to get anything done when he's in the house. Like, anything. And I didn't know what I could do. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I heard about this wonderful organization in Ramat Beit Shemesh called Ezrat Achim. Ezrat Achim is a man named Rabbi Abraham Kapp, and he's a Hasidish guy, and he lives in Ramat Beit. If anyone's familiar with Ramat Beit, it is Hasidish. Ramat Aleph is in. And he is the biggest Ohev Yisrael that I've ever met in my life. People said he should get like an Ohev Yisrael award with the war 2 summers ago. He was the first one bringing chayalim, all the things that they needed. He organized all the neighborhood kids, all of them. It didn't matter if they were religious or not religious, to make packages for the chayalim. He's just an amazing role model. And he started off with some, I don't know, wheelchairs and crutches in his basement. And now it's branched out to this huge organization that helps everyone do everything. One of the things that they help me with is they have a Moedonit, a center, and Shmuel goes there every Friday after school. And if he didn't go there after school, we would not have food for Shabbos. And I mean that very seriously. I can't do anything when he's home. And now there is a problem because they don't have enough money. For whatever reason, they're not helped yet by the Iriah the way they should be helped, and they're going to close. And I know you're all sitting here thinking, what can we do to make sure that Rabbi Haber has his chelen on Shabbos, right? So I'm going to tell you, okay? We're making a bike-a-thon, and we're trying to involve as many seminaries as possible. I teach in Tiferet. We're going to speak in Midrashat Moriah. We're hopefully speaking in other ones also. I don't want to say the names yet, it's not 100%. And what we want to do is make a seminary-wide thing where we're going to have a bike-a-thon, and everyone registers for a fee, and then you commit to raise certain amounts of money, and it's a 1.5-hour easy ride. I found to my shock when we presented this in Tiferet that some girls don't know how to ride bikes. I didn't know that people don't know how to ride bikes. If you don't know how to ride a bike, that's fine. You could be a cheerleader. But the really important thing is Rabbi Haber needs his children, right? So he doesn't even like children. He's going to kill me tomorrow night. Girls, no one's going to say a word to him, right? How many girls are you here? Okay, so that's why I came to speak tonight about my son. I always speak about my son, and I wanted to get you that message of Shmuel, which I hope I did, but I also wanted to enlist your help to please, if you could help. I know it's not a Beit Shemesh organization, but a lot of Beit Shemesh teachers work here, and it's just, we're going to get a lot of seminars. It's going to be on a Friday, so you don't have to worry about going away. You know, you don't have to worry about school or classes or anything like that. And that's what we're here to help you. So Daphna, who's from Ezrat Achim, is going to come up here to answer any questions about the bike-a-thon. And again, it's going to be a 1.5-hour ride. We're going to have a nice meal afterwards. You girls have a huge reputation to uphold, which I just saw upstairs, about being the seminary that collects the most money. Is that correct? So I'm hoping... Yeah. So basically, the way we're going to work it is we're going to stay here for a little bit afterwards. Anyone who wants to sign up and make a commitment, we're here to answer questions. And then we'll give you an actual picture of a kid, and you're going to help get that kid to the Moadoni on Friday and Shabbos to help the families. Now, does anyone have any questions?
Yeah.
When is it?
Friday, November 27th, Bezrat Hashem, weather permitting.
If the weather's not good, we'll do it later in the year.
Yeah, we provide everything. Transportation, we'll have a central location in Yerushalayim. Hopefully we'll have enough schools that we'll all get together in Yerushalayim. And we'll have there and back, and we have the bikes, and we have an armed guard with us, and we have guides for the trip. It's all organized.
Where is it? Where's the actual bike?
It's going to be in Park Yarkon. It's in the Tel Aviv area.
And we have great incentives for you if you raise a lot of money. What is the best incentive that you could even think of wanting? What? What? Tell me. Rabbi Haber's what? Chalin. But I know you want. I can't invite you over. That's the problem. I would love to. The best incentive is, of course, a gift certificate from
JBC, Michael Rose.
Yeah, isn't that the best thing?
T-shirts, yes, Bezrat Hashem.
What time is it?
The time is still up in the air, but it'll start around 9 o'clock, and it'll be over by 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Anyone else have questions? So there is a...
Yeah.
How much money would we be expected to raise?
So there's a $30 registration fee just to register, and then beyond that, there's a commitment to raise a minimum of $250. We'll be right outside. You can come right over.
Did anyone hear what she said? She said, how do we sign up? So we'll be right outside there. Does anyone have any other question like that? Yeah.
If we don't sign up today, can we sign up later?
So we're going to ask one of the girls here who could maybe be our liaison
we'll
to
have
take
option.
Down that, because we can't come back, but if there's somebody who could volunteer, if girls want to sign up. I know you may want to think about this. You may need to speak to your parents about it. I understand it's money. It's a lot of money. You should just know that I talked to a lot of girls before we came up with the amount. If you think, if like anyone thinks it's like a crazy amount, but they really, really want to participate, please speak to us. Okay. Does anyone want to know how to sign up? Because we'll be outside right there. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, girls. You're a wonderful audience.